This is the presentation about the Osmocom BTS hardware support, which is a presentation I am doing together with Alexander, who is... Ah, he's right in front. I was looking at you where you were sitting before. It's like, oh, the chair is empty. Where is he going? He's right here. Yeah, so I'm going to do the introductory part and talk about mostly the more classic BTSs, and then Alexander is taking over for the Osmo TRX-related BTSs because that's really his... but he has way more information or way more understanding than I have. So I have tried to draw a slide or a graph using my favorite slide drawing tool called Dot, Dotty, and I tried to show all the different supported BTS models. So actually, it's too wide to really put, even with this writing, on a single slide. But this is basically all the different BTSs that we support. Try to fit that on one slide. This is also already in the wiki. I already put it in the Osmocom wiki, so they can review it in more detail. So in general, we have two classes of BTSs that we support. We have the classic E1, T1 based BTSs that are illustrated there, and we have the IP based BTSs on the left hand side. Most people are these days, of course, focusing on IP based BTSs, but still I'd like to include those E1 based because there might actually still be some use because you can get quite professional grade E1 based BTSs secondhand very inexpensively these days. And that's also where we started. So we started with E1, T1 based BTSs, and we have support for basically three different vendors or dialects of the Avis interface. I'm not claiming we can support all the Siemens or all the Ericsson base stations or all the Nokia ones, but these are sort of the models that we have successful testing with. And particularly in the Ericsson case, I'm quite convinced that almost all of the RBS 2000 BTSs should work because they all have the same protocol architecture. And in terms of advantages or disadvantages, if we look at this, on the pro side for these old E1, T1 based devices, well, you get them very inexpensively from decommissioned sites. And that doesn't mean, I mean, you have to chase individual people who deinstall or decommission BTSs, but there's an entire market and there are suppliers such as Shields E or PowerStorm or however they're called, basically companies that do nothing else but sell refurbished or secondhand telecom grade equipment, and they have huge databases and catalogs what they have currently in stock and so on. So, and you can get like really large capacity, so up to 12 TRX, which I think no IP based BTS that I know supports, whether open source or not. You can get really high RF output power built into the devices themselves. As I said, you can get like 40 or even more watts. A rugged mechanical build, high mean time to failure. Of course, they're also used, and they that might not always be an advantage because, well, they've been running for quite some time. Anyway, yeah, on the con side, well, it's a bit antiquated. Not many people are familiar with the technology, even to, let's say, install E1, T1 lines and to debug them and to analyze issues. And it's not so nice. Also, in terms of interfaces, you just don't have an E1 port on your laptop. Even in a lot of embedded devices, if you think of very popular embedded Linux devices, nothing has anything where you have an E1 port. So you end up having to have a device that has PCI Express slots and have to have PCIe cards for the E1 interface. So it's not that nice. Power consumption also tends to be really high, of course, because it's old equipment. Efficiency was not such a key aspect, and also the technology was not as advanced to have that efficiency. And then also the very old models, like the Siemens PS11, for example, they don't have eGPRS, so there's no 8PSK support or no AMR codec because the design of these devices predates adaptive multirate. So how does this actually look like? I have to bring this up. A lot of people will know it already, but this is actually two Siemens PS11 base stations at the Hacking at Random Camp 2009. And this is the professional antenna installation. No red tape here, no pun intended. And so, well, that's basically was the first deployment of OpenBSC at the Hacking at Random Camp 2009. And here you can see all the cabling coming down from the antennas. So we had an E1 backhaul over Cat5 cable to OpenBSC running in a tent. I'm not showing the tent. We have some other devices that we support over time. There's the RBS 2308, for example. There's many other RBS 2000 models, also RBS 2111. And this is actually a picture like you can find it on eBay right now today for, I think, like $300-$500 or so, and it has 40 RX already inside. You know, it's a pretty good price point. There's of course the IPS Nano BCS. This is an old one. There's more modern ones, and that's already getting into the IP-based world. So yes, they're PoE enabled and so on. You can deploy them. You can get them in GPRS only or eGPRS enabled models, band specific and so on and so on. But of course, like all the previous ones I described, the BTS and or well, in this case, the PCU is also inside, is proprietary, and not everybody has been quite happy with that for all kinds of reasons. And the number one reason even is that lots of crashes and no way to fix it. So, yeah, but it is one supported option. Also, there's no fully dynamic channels, which we support in the Osmo BTS-based devices these days. So some features. Then you have lots of Sysmo BTS devices. I don't want to talk too much about them. It's like the different devices we have and the capabilities, which, as we have described before, use Osmo BTS and Osmo PCU. There's something from a company called Neuran, the Neuran LightCell 1.5, which is a 10-watt 2TRX outdoor BTS, which has a specific port of Osmo BTS. It's called the Osmo BTS LightCell 15, because we don't want dots in the executable names, which interfaces with the proprietary physical layer using a shared memory queue, and we have Osmo PCU, which pretty much just the same in that device. And this is in master mainline of the repository, so this is not some fork of the code, but it is on gitosmo.com.org. There is Octasic boards. This basically, various different basically SDR boards with proprietary physical layer running in an Octasic specific DSP. We actually have a port of Osmo BTS that can run off that. That's the Osmo BTS Oct file, if you've ever seen that somewhere in compiling or configuring the code. It talks over Unix domain socket to the Osmo PCU for GPRS support, and there's a series of different boards which have different like number of DSPs, number of radio interfaces, and so on. You can check the manufacturer if that's something that you're interested in. As far as I know, maybe I'm wrong, and please correct me if I'm wrong, eGPRS is not working yet due to some issues with the integration on the PCU side. Is that correct, Philip? Yeah. Okay. That's still the case. Also, I think not all voice codecs are supported, the GSM supports at the moment, but otherwise it is like any other Osmo BTS supported device. And that's where I'm coming to my end of file and handing over to Alexander for the Osmo TRX and Osmo BTS TRX supported devices.
Okay. So now let's talk about software-defined radio, or a more DIY way of playing with Osmocom and all the way to production. So for those who don't know what software-defined radio is, so software-defined radio is the easiest way to describe it. It's a sound card for radio waves. So the same way a sound card takes digital signal on your computer, produces sound waves, software-defined radio takes digital signals in your computer and it produces radio waves. That's the basic way how it works. So the way it interfaces with the Osmocom stack is that so you have this hardware, which is software-defined radio, right? And it is talking to the radio part of the system. And on the other hand, it is taking the digital signal into computer and talking to all of this software on the computer, where UHD is a driver, basically, which is working with multiple versions of software-defined radios and then providing a single API to a software called Osmo TRX. And Osmo TRX is implementing what's called like layer zero or lower layer one, which is basically doing modulation, demodulation, and producing bursts of soft beats. Then they are going to Osmo BTS, which is implementing layer one, layer two. And after Osmo BTS, it's the same familiar Osmocom stack as with every other architecture. So a small overview of SDR hardware available currently for Osmo TRX. So two most popular, by my personal assessment, looking at the like mailing list and talking to people, so is our YumTRX, which was designed specifically for GSM. And by the way, a laboratory version of this is open source hardware with all the sources published. So it's open source hardware device. And the second one is USRP B200, which is just a very popular software-defined radio in general. That's why many people are using it with Osmocom, just because they already have it. And there is a bunch of others, like USRP 1 was the very first one ever used for GSM, now no longer manufactured and sold. And then there is like USRP N200, which are more expensive, usually used in laboratories, embedded devices. Recently, Lima SDR was supported, which is a new USB-based low-cost SDR. So XTRX, which is a new generation of SDR we are developing currently. It's will be available soon. So, and answering to two popular questions, so Blade RF and Hawk RF are not supported currently for different reasons. Hawk RF is half duplex, so it's not possible to support it because base station must be full duplex. Blade RF technically should work, but there was no work done to actually, you know, implement it in Osmo TRX. So patches are welcome if there are Blade RF fans. Welcome to submit patches for this. So if you're looking to get a new SDR for you, so there are several parameters you should be looking for and should understand to make sure you're getting what you're expecting. So the most important part and the biggest issues you will be facing is clock accuracy. So according to the standard, clock accuracy of GSM cells must be 50 ppb or 0.00 ppm, which is parts per million for macro cells, or 0.1 for small cells and for pico cells. So that's quite accurate clock. Let's put it this way. So this is required if you want to build network with handover, for example. So in practice, if you are doing lab testing with a single base station, 200 ppbs or 400 ppbs part per billion, that should be okay as long as you don't do handover. Most phones will work. Further than that, there is no guarantee. Some phones will work, some phones will not work, some phones will kind of work and then like fail. It's like no guarantee space. The problem is that most commercially available SDRs out there has accuracy of 1.2 ppm, which is like an order of magnitude worse. So what this means is that this is basically hit and miss for you. If you are working in the laboratory at fixed temperature, because clock drifts a lot due to temperature. So if it's fixed temperature and you calibrated it, may work for a while, may stop working next day. You know, if you're getting on a street, will stop working again. So it's hit and miss, and you will also depend on, okay, so this unit works, this unit doesn't work, because you know they have different crystals with different initial accuracy. Due to manufacturing differences. So, and this applies to all USRPs, Lima SDRs, Blade RF, so pretty much to all of them. So what to do in this case, you have basically two options. or like three options. So first of all, you can use external clock. So if you have another stable clock, maybe from your signal generator in laboratory or just a static clock, you can use this as a clock source to lock on it. Or you can get GPS DO. For example, Atos is selling GPS DO specifically for their users, and then you have to put antenna and get locked to GPS signal to synchronize, or you have to regularly calibrate towards using some other external clock source. So, and this problem was actually the reason why we started Umtrix project back in 2008, I think. Or nine, because we were completely stuck with this issue. We created, our own clock. Then we started creating our own SDR, and so Umtrix is again the only popular SDR I know of, which has a clock which is 0.1 ppm stability by itself plus GPS, so you can get even lower to 50 ppb. With GPS lock, which means that you won't have this problem at all. So next thing is clock rate. So GSM symbol clock rate is 13 divided by 48 megahertz. And ideally, you want to avoid fractional resampling, makes signal slightly worse, adds a lot of CPU consumption. It's not the worst thing ever. For example, USERF N, even though it has a 50 megahertz clock, which is requires fractional resampling, still generates a good signal. Many people are using it in their labs. Better to have integer. So again, if you are choosing something for your experimentation, better to have something like Umtrix or B200, which has a flexible clock rate, so it adjusts to your requirements. Another 2 points. First of all, is interface. So there are three interfaces for the different software-defined radios. First is USB, which is like USERP B200 and Lime SDR. There is Ethernet. It's Umtrix and different versions of USERPs and PCI Express again for upcoming districts. So USB is very handy when you are doing like development, and specifically if you are using your laptop and you are like moving. So you just plug in and it works. It's very nice. On the other hand, there's a lot of issues with USB if you try to run it in production for like for month of runtime. Just various issues with USB. So that's why, again, Ethernet is much more handy if you are doing something long-run related. Output RF power, another popular question. So people are buying SDRs and they're like, oh, like my SDR is not covering more than a couple meters. So what do I do, right? So first of all, a thing to note is that there are very low power SDRs. 10 dBm is basically 10 milliwatts. And some of them even go lower. So B200, E300, Lime SDR are all on in this ballpark. And there are SDRs which have higher power. So again, Umtrix, USERP N200 have higher power. So with low power, you'll get like few meters, less than 10 meters, definitely. With these guys, you can get like 100 meters, 200 meters, depending on configuration, antenna, whatever. So. Radio front end. Another thing to keep in mind when talking about radios is like the coverage is what is your radio front end, because again, this is just 100 milliwatts out of here. So and even if you have 100 milliwatts, in some cases you don't need duplexer, in some cases you do need duplexer. So what is duplexer? So duplexer is device which actually combines transmitter and receive signals and separates them. So to make sure that your transmit signal is not blinding your receive signal, because if you have too strong transmit signal, your receiver will listen all this noise and will not be actually able to receive low power signal from phones. So If you are adding any power amplifier, duplexer is basically a must for you. And another thing, and the LNA is low noise amplifier, the same on the receive side. So this is ties back to what Harald was talking about, the path loss calculations and how it's called, the sensitivity and all the stuff. So this is what affects it, right? So, and this is how it looks like, for example, in our base station. So this is our base station like inside. So this is the SDR, this is a PC, and these are two power amplifiers because it's a dual channel base station. So power amplifiers, and this block is low noise amplifier plus duplexer. So you can see that so this cable is going into, like, from the SDR into power amplifier. So here it gets out of power amplifier, amplified, goes into here, and then goes into duplexer inside, and this is antenna. So so from TX it goes to antenna here. Then on the other way, it gets from antenna inside, goes to here, this which is receive port, and then go through like low noise amplifier here, and then into the SDR. So that's how it looks like. Yeah, the same picture, like layered. So another reason why you do care about duplexers when you're putting amplifiers is that you should filter out all the noise you will be producing in the spectrum. And I request that if you put an amplifier, don't put it into operation unless you have good equipment to check that you actually filtered out all the noise, because this is, look, this is a signal which we, for example, transmit at what's that, 826 megahertz, which is I think in 850 band for North American GSM band, and as you can see, this signal also has the second spur at 2.4 gig, which will basically completely interfere with your Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, like whatever you're running in 2.4. So unless you filter this out, this will be in the spectrum, and it will be high power. The difference between 1 and 2 is only 10 dB. So if you are putting, you know, like 10 watt amplifier, you will be like 1 watt at this, which is like a lot. So please don't do that. Okay, so now to the actual configuration. So well, actually, you can read all of this in the documentation, but basically there are very few parameters: receive gain, transmit attenuation. Again, we are transmitting attenuation, not the power. A max delay is the basically radius of the cell. Everything else is not so important. These are the parts which you have to really care of, and MS power loop also make sure you're doing this right. So Osmo TRX has no VTI, no file configuration, only command line options. But in most cases, you just need to, you can just run it with no parameters or any minimal parameters. Minus G just enables GPSDO lock for USRP. Otherwise, it's very straightforward to run initially. If you want more channels, specify minus M with B210 with no M, because it's already dual channel. And that's basically it for now. Again, slides will be published. If you want to read them more in more details, you are welcome to do so.
Okay, thanks. Slightly. Do we have questions? Again, we are slightly behind schedule, so but still one or two questions I think we can take.
Okay, so just about the Blade RF, does it, I believe that works with Yate BTS, right? Which is that a
That's my understanding as well. So basically Yate BTS, so initially Osmo TRX is a fork of code from Osmo BT from OpenBTS. OpenBTS transceiver was forked and we created Osmo TRX and added much more features, optimizations and whatnot. So Yate BTS has another fork, but I guess the code base is kind of compatible. So again, if there is anyone interested in Blade RF support, you can take a look at Yate BTS code and try to adapt it to the existing Osmo TRX code base. Should be reasonably doable.
Hi, just a small question. This is regarding, I think, 2G. There is some project or some plan to do compatible the Osmo UMTS project with SDR boards?
So there is an OpenBTS UMTS, which is outside of OsmoCom project, which is a completely separate open source project. You know, it supports SDRs, like, you know, our UMTRX is supported, the user PISA is supported. I mean, you can try it. It's not very stable. It's definitely far behind stability compared to OsmoCom projects. So Thomas wanted to ask something.
Oh, sorry.
Or comment something. So Thomas is actually the maintainer of Osmo TRX. So,
so regarding the OpenBTS UMTS, my understanding is most of the development on that now is no longer in the public open. Range Networks is still operating a business there, but they have a commercial version that's internal, and we don't know what the status of that is. So for anyone interested, you would have to contact them for that information. And also speaking from the EDIS research side, I'm not aware of anyone working or in progress on doing anything in terms of UMTS layer one, so to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, and like my personal understanding is that UMTS is going to die way before 2G and LTE will just take over. So there's a lot of going activities in for LTE, there's a lot of activities for GSM. UMTS is kind of just declining. Thanks for welcome.
Yeah.